Have you ever wanted to play the perfect tabletop game, where story beats run smoothly, and there's no awkward pauses between dice rolls? Yeah, me too. But since that's impossible, I did the next best thing, and novelized my Witcher tabletop game to showcase the story in its cleanest form. The result is this podcast. I'm Jacob Gerstel, and this is Tales from the Witcher. Part audiobook, part actual play, part serialized adventure, and a whole new way to vicariously enjoy tabletop games. Welcome to the world of The Witcher, where monsters roam freely and the continent is once again at war. If you were hoping to follow the plight of Geralt of Rivia, however, I'm not going to be doing that. Instead, I offer you the story of a not-so-merry band of degenerates who are making their way across the continent. So sit back, relax, and enjoy. A fine thing. 1. The sheep seemed endless. Zevo didn't know how many the shepherd had in his flock, but it must have numbered in the hundreds. He had been herding them across the road for at least half an hour. Zevo's horse, Diable, snorted and stomped at the dirt. Ethramel's horse, still unnamed, followed Diable's lead. They were unfortunate enough to be trapped in the middle of the road, waiting on a greybeard's slow shepherding and a seemingly endless supply of livestock. Zedra tightened a peg on her lute and said, "I think I shall name this ballad The Fluffy Tide. It will be an ode to the salt of the earth Edernians and their—" "Please don't sing another damn song," Ethramel sniffed. "Not when I'm so irritated." Zevo glanced to the field on his left, where the sheep were coming from. There were a few farms, spread apart at seemingly random distances. Zevo glanced to the field on his right, where the sheep were going. There were a few farms, spread apart at seemingly random distances. It had looked that way for half a day, which meant some form of civilization had to be close at hand. Jeremiah of Edern seemed to have a similar thought, as he stepped forward and called to the shepherd.
"Oi, do you know if there's a town nearby?"
The greybeard waved his staff at Jeremiah and had to shout over the bleats. "Aye, not too far down to road. Can't miss it."
"That's a fine staff, friend," Jeremiah called. "Would you happen to need anything repaired or mended? I'm a craftsman, you know."
"A what?"
"A craftsman. Finest in Edern."
"'Tain't need no crafts." The shepherd prodded a wandering sheep back to the herd with his staff. "Call me Greenham for all that." Zevo sighed and pulled out his map. "Do you know where we are?"
"Aye, you're in the Bleaton Valley, course."
The shepherd rounded behind the last of the sheep, and the road was cleared. He swiped at the dust that had been kicked up. "Town just up to road. Can't miss it." The town turned out to be little more than 5 shops around a small village square, at the base of scraggly hills. A polished wooden statue of a dignified-looking shepherd, staff in hand, was set on a pedestal at the center of the square. Jeremiah pointed to the shop with a sign that read Butcher and said,
"I'll secure our provisions."
"Yeah, yeah, just get us a discount," Cedra said without stopping. She headed for the inn, aptly named the Shepherd's Rest. Ethramel followed. Jeremiah huffed and looked up at Zevo.
"No respect for the yard, I tell ya."
"Make sure what you get can last," the Witcher said. "We've got weeks till we reach the Mahakam Mountains."
"No faith either," Jeremiah said, heading towards the butcher.
Zevo hitched Diable up to a nearby post and examined the bulletin board outside the tavern. There were few legible posts, mostly from farmers claiming their sheep had been stolen. Zevo's eye rounded up the corner of the board, where a far more legible letter, on finer parchment and with finer handwriting, was pinned. Zevo grabbed it with his diminished left hand and tore it down. "Looking for a professional to investigate my home," the letter read. "Its previous owner was recently murdered, and I'm looking to find out who, or what, did it. If interested, ask for Mikhail." The Witcher dilated his cat-like eye and adjusted to the darkened light of the Shepherd's Rest. He saw 6 locals sitting at a table near the door, heads in their drinks. Cedra stood at the bar. Ethramel sat at a table in the back, drinking with a stout dwarf. Zevo approached the bar.
"Do you know who Mikhail is?"
"Gonna order a drink first?" the innkeeper asked.
"Sure. Do you know who Mikhail is?"
The innkeeper motioned towards the dwarf, who was laughing uproariously.
"Thanks."
"You know what this place needs," Cedra said, plucking at her lute. "Music." The troubadour began to play, but wasn't 4 bars in before one of the locals shouted, "Shut that shit up!" Cedra stopped immediately and bowed, returning to the bar.
"Don't take it personal," the innkeeper said. "Just a bad time. Everyone's mourning."
"Because of a murder," Zevo said. It wasn't a question.
"Aye. Matthias Tredegor, killed not a week ago. Funeral was this morning. Real sad gathering."
"All the more reason for music," Cedra muttered. Zevo took his beer to the back table. The dwarf wore a fine, dark blue coat that contrasted his golden beard. He pointed to Ethramel and said, "And let me hand you a word of advice. They'll always give you sour looks at first, but you gotta persevere. Most humans respect elder folk that don't give up." Ethramel put his mug down, his normally pale cheeks taking on a pink hue. "In my experience, dwarves just kick you harder when you don't sit down."
"Mind if I join you, Mikhail?"
The dwarf looked up and grinned. He spoke with an earthy accent, like many Mahakam dwarves.
"Not at all, Master Witcher."
Zevo sat down and put Mikhail's post on the table.
"Previous owner was murdered in your house?"
"Aye, Matthias Tredegor. Fine fellow from what I've heard. Rich, too. Has the nicest home in all the Bleaton Valley."
"Which I'm sure you acquired at a steep discount."
"Course I did," Mikhail said. "Wouldn't be a good business dwarf if I didn't. But I tell you what, folks around here don't like a Mahakam coming in and buying one of their homes a week after someone's been murdered."
Ethramel laughed through his beer.
"I can't possibly imagine why."
"And why'd a Mahakam dwarf buy a home in the Bleeding Valley?" Zevo asked.
"I'm looking to retire," Mikhail said. "Made enough crowns for my lifetime. I wanted to get out of the mountains and settle down someplace quiet. Someplace..."
He trailed off, tapping the table with a stubby finger.
"Someplace Nilfgaard won't bother to take," Zevo finished.
"Aye. Some might say the timing is suspicious."
Mikhail scoffed. "Is there ever a good time to buy a dead man's house? What's it matter if I wait 3 days or 3 years before I buy it? But go on, ask what you're thinking." "No? Well, then I'll answer your question anyway. I didn't kill Matthias Tredegor, but I'd appreciate your help in clearing my name by finding the real killer. I'll pay you 25 crowns to inspect the house."
"Why do you think it might be the work of a monster and not ordinary bandits?" Zevo asked.
Mikhail chuckled. "Don't know any bandits that could break down a wall like that. You'll see if you investigate."
Zevo grunted. "I'll check it for 50, and if I think it's the work of a creature, we can discuss the price of removing said creature. Or I can go on my way, and you can wait for the next witcher to wander past."
"Careful, Mikhail," Ethramel said. "This witcher charges premium."
The dwarf ground his teeth, but nodded.
"All right, damn ya. 50 crowns.
Zevo held up his mug. "To the Bleeding Valley."
They clinked mugs and drank. Mikhail pointed at Cedra and shouted, "You there! Join us for a drink."
Cedra pointed to herself, putting on a look of surprise. She leaned over the bar and whispered something. The innkeeper nodded and poured her another mug of beer. She sauntered over and sat.
"Thanks for the drink, Mikhail."
"You've got good ears on you," Mikhail said. "So you must have heard my sad tale.
Tell me, as a troubadour, I imagine you've written a few ballads in your time. Ballads praising the deeds of honorable and legendary men."
Cedra flipped her hair.
"But of course. Humanity needs legends like a horse needs oats. Without it, we would simply cease to be. All well and good."
Mikhail leaned in close and started to whisper.
"Look, I ain't the most popular in this community, but I plan on staying a long while. What would you say to helping me garner a reputation? You know, singing my praises for the townsfolk."
Cedra took a long sip of beer. "Savoring the moment, no doubt," Zevo thought. "I don't see this ending well."
At last, she put the mug down and grinned. "Well, in order to do you justice, I'd have to learn a little bit about you."
The dwarf matched her grin and slammed his palms on the table.
"What did you like to know?"
2.
Jeremiah looked at the mark on the map he was given, and squinted at the house and solitary barn up ahead. He hoped it was the right one, northeast of town, he was told, but had difficulty distinguishing one sheep farm from another in the endless pasture. The freely wandering sheep, sometimes without shepherds, didn't help his sense of direction. Still, he was fairly positive the cottage in front of him belonged to Greernham. The home had a poorly mended fence around it, with chipped and sagging wood. The grass around the home and barn needed tending, if the yellowed patches and overgrown weeds were any indication. Jeremiah opened the gate, wincing at the sound of the squeaky metal hinge that needed oil.
"What self-respecting craftsman would live in a home like this?" Jeremiah thought.
He
He stopped amongst the dying grass and cupped his hands around his mouth.
"Oi, Greenham, I wish to speak."
No answer. Jeremiah looked up and saw a thin tendril of gray smoke rising from the chimney. He sighed, walked to the door, and knocked. Jeremiah heard grumbling and someone ask, "Who's there?"
"Jeremiah Keller, of Edern. A humble..."
"Who?"
"Jeremiah Keller, of Edern."
Jeremiah paused, hoping his last name carried some weight even in a backwater valley like this. Evidently it did not, judging by the lack of response.
"I'm a traveling craftsman, and wish to speak with you."
"Why are you here?" the voice behind the door asked.
"Would that I knew," Jeremiah thought.
He had bought enough salted mutton from the butcher earlier that day, haggling the price down quite steeply, he thought, since he was buying 2 weeks of rations for three. Not that the witcher or troubadour cared. They were busy getting their own jobs when he entered the shepherd's rest. He saw them all talking to a dwarf, and quickly decided he did not want to join.
"They can make their own coin, and I can make mine," he thought.
So he asked the innkeeper if there was a place he could set up shop. The innkeeper hesitated, and said that the folks of the Bleeding Valley don't have much need for a craftsman. The innkeeper added that Greenham typically fixed what needed fixing, for next to nothing on top of it, and might not take kindly to another man stealing his business. The innkeeper even pointed to the wooden statue in the square, and said, with pride, that it was Greenham's work.
"And here I am," Jeremiah thought, staring at a crooked door. "Out of professional courtesy. Plow in hell." "You see, I'm also a craftsman," Jeremiah said, "and I wanted to pay my respects to the man who mends what needs mending in this lovely valley."
A pause. Then Jeremiah heard the clicking of three locks. The door opened to reveal a slight man in his late 50s, with tousled white hair and a bushy mustache. He eyed Jeremiah and said, "Sorry, didn't mean to sound so inhospitable. Come on in, I just made some tea." Greenham's home was as unkempt on the inside as it was on the outside. The living room took up most of the cottage, and the large wooden slab of a workman's table took up most of the living room, and a scattering of paper, hand tools, and a half-carved figurine took up most of the workman's table. Greenham motioned for Jeremiah to sit as he filled two earthenware cups with tea. "So you're a craftsman, eh?" he asked as he handed Jeremiah a cup. "What brings you to this forgotten corner of the world?"
"Just passing through," Jeremiah said, blowing on the steaming tea. "Some of my companions took work around here, so it looks like we may be staying a moment."
"Aye, what kind of work?"
"Witcher work, most like."
Greenham narrowed his watery blue eyes. He spoke with suspicion, and Jeremiah imagined Zevo got that tone a lot. "A witcher, eh? I imagine it's got something to do with Matthias of Tredegor." Jeremiah didn't have the faintest idea.
"Perhaps, but I was hoping to set up shop while I'm here. Assist the folks in whatever way I can."
"Good luck. Most these folks ever need mended is a staff or fence. Suits me fine. I prefer working with wood. Make little carvings to pass the time." Greenham picked up the wooden figurine that looked like a half-formed girl stuck in a block of ice.
"I noticed the statue in the square. Excellent craftsmanship."
Jeremiah put on his most charming smile.
"Perhaps the village could use an alchemist."
Greenham's bushy white eyebrows rose up. "You're an alchemist?"
"I dabble."
"What can you make?"
"Simple things," Jeremiah said, and thought to add, "for simple folk."
But he held his tongue.
"I imagine some shepherds could make use of sterilizing fluid, for example."
Greenham's nose wrinkled. "Sterilizing fluid? Not sure about that." Jeremiah was rapidly deciding that he didn't much care what the old craftsman was sure or unsure about. He didn't need Greenham's permission to pursue his trade and make his money. He was simply visiting the man out of mutual courtesy and respect. Respect, which was clearly not reciprocated. He stood up and said,
"Well, we can find out, I suppose. Thank you for the tea."
"Wait." Greenham sighed and rubbed his forehead. "Forgive my lack of manners. I don't get many visitors these days, so I'm out of practice. You only realize company's a fine thing when you're deprived of it. Stay a moment longer. At least finish your tea."
"I really should be off."
"Please," Greenham said. "We can talk craft if you'd like. Or trade." Jeremiah thought of a half dozen things he'd rather be doing, and most of them involved setting up his shop and making money. He shook his head.
"I appreciate the hospitality, but it's getting dark. I need to..."
"How about a friendly wager, then?" Jeremiah slowly sat back down.
"Wager?"
"Aye, a simple one. I provide you with a diagram of something, and you provide me with a diagram of your sterilizing fluid. Whoever creates the better product can keep the other one's diagram. How's that sound?
Sounds like it depends on the diagram, Jeremiah thought,
but he had to admit the idea held some appeal. He imagined showing off a fine weapon or piece of armor and seeing the faces of his companions. If it was good enough, maybe he could get one of them to buy it. Jeremiah held out his hand.
Sounds fine to me.
Grinham nodded and shook. He scattered some papers on the table and pulled out a simple piece of parchment. Tell me, have you ever been to the Kingdom of Kedwin?
I have.
I used to live there, you know. Yes, spent many good years in Kedwin, crafting for the army all over.
What's the diagram?
Grunum settled on a single piece of parchment and handed it to Jeremiah. Designed for a Kedwini kite shield. Take a look. Jeremiah did, trying his best to commit the diagram to memory. The materials were relatively simple. Hardened timber, leather, beast bones, ogre wax, and dark steel. But the design looked elegant, all the makings of a sturdy shield. Jeremiah fished into his bag and pulled out a rolled piece of parchment. Sterilizing fluid was similarly simple. Only needed two common herbs and a base to create. No doubt Grunum had the advantage, but Jeremiah was confident he would win. Grunum took the design, looked it over, and nodded. Best of luck, Jeremiah Keller of Edern. Jeremiah smiled.
You as well, Grunum of the Bleeding Valley.
Now at least finish your tea, and tell me about the designs you've come across. Jeremiah found he could talk at length about such things, and he did. Grunum didn't seem to mind one bit. You can stay the night if you wish, Grunum said when Jeremiah found an appropriate moment to excuse himself. The valley doesn't feel as safe as it used to, not since Matthias's unfortunate end. Jeremiah nodded, but didn't probe any deeper. That was the Witcher's job. He had his own job to do.
I'll be all right. Thank you for your hospitality.
Jeremiah found his way back to town in the dark. He ordered a drink at the Shepherd's Rest, sat at the table, and looked over the diagram. He heard the door open, but didn't look back. He heard someone shuffle towards him, but didn't look up. He heard someone drop into the seat across from his, and only then did he look. He saw Cedra, with a mug of ale in front of her crossed arms.
You all right?
Jeremiah asked. Cedra huffed. I had a day. 3. Cedra played softly for the sheep as she tried to pass through. This was not without difficulty, as the farmer's fenced-off field was expansive and packed with the fluffy creatures. At least they seemed to appreciate her music. Cedra had spent her afternoon speaking with Mikhail, long after Zevo and Ethramel departed to explore his new home. She wanted to know more about her new employer. She learned from Circe that all great tales contain grains of truth from which to grow, like a mighty oak sprouting from a simple seed. If she grabbed just a few small seeds, she could cultivate the dwarf's legend with finesse and skill. Sad to say, she didn't gain much. Mikhail, it turned out, was a thoroughly average Mahakam dwarf with a thoroughly average tale. It was rags to riches, sure, from his humble beginnings as a miner, to building up the capital to purchase his own mines in the mountain, to striking it rich when he discovered a bountiful vein of ore. And what did the dwarf do with all this newfound wealth and influence? Retire to the Bleeding Valley. Riveting, the troubadour thought. But she prodded Mikhail with more questions, if just to get another ale out of him. That's when Mikhail offered his own thoughts on how to win over the humble shepherds of the valley. The village lacked an alderman or castellan, instead being governed, in the loosest sense of the term, it seemed, by a council of three villagers. There was Bidlin the Butcher, Olna, owner of the dry goods store, and Barmium, who Mikhail described as one of the most successful shepherds, but one of the most eccentric. Cedra thanked Mikhail for the information and promised to use her prodigious skills to increase his reputation amongst the villagers. That's how she found herself waiting among sheepshit later that evening. She had decided to speak with Barmium first, and the size of his flock seemed to confirm that he was, indeed, one of the most successful shepherds in the valley. Cedra hoped he wasn't one of the most eccentric. She reached the cottage door and strummed a chord before knocking. She heard a reedy voice cry out, "Who is it?"
"Do I have the pleasure of speaking to Barmium?"
"Yes. What do you want?"
"My name is Cedra Lestrette, and I merely wish to speak with you. I won't take up too much of your time, I promise."
"All right, but take 5 steps back, and just so you know, I'm coming out armed."
Cedra did as she was told, shifting her back foot in case she needed to flee. Still, she smiled as a bald man stepped out, gripping a pitchfork. He eyed Cedra as she bowed. "It's a pleasure to meet you, Barmium."
"Okay.
What do you want?
To play you a song, if you'll allow. I'm a traveling troubadour, you see, and I simply wish to create a little joy with music wherever I go.
Barmium craned his neck to look behind Cedra, then slowly nodded.
Well, okay.
Cedra took a deep breath and began the song she had been composing in her head. She sang of a mighty dwarf with a heart like a majestic mountain. She sang of a rustic man who never lost sight of the simple things in life, even as wealth tried to wither his majestic mountain heart. She sang of dedication and perseverance against all odds. She tried her fucking best. When she finished, Barmium rested his pitchfork against his shoulder and clapped. A little unsurely, it seemed to the troubadour.
Thank you, the man said in his reedy voice. Can't say I approve of the subject matter, though.
Cedra raised an eyebrow.
Oh, and why's that?
'Cause I don't trust dwarves and their greed.
Cedra could have screamed.
Far be it from me to push back against a critic of the arts, but it seems you may have missed the point of the ballad. This dwarf, you see, never abandons his values, never...
Mikhail.
Pardon?
You're singing about Mikhail, right? The rich Mahakam dwarf that just moved to the valley?
Cedra put on her best shocked face.
Why, sir, an artist never reveals the source of their inspiration, and I find it to be a rude assertion, to be quite honest. And I find it rude you come to my home uninvited and sing ballads about the elder folks. The Bleaton Valley doesn't welcome outsiders easy, you know. Especially rich ones who think they could build manors and not have to work with their hands.
Cedra looked down to see a curious sheep approaching her. She shooed it away with a wave of her foot.
I take it you mean Matthias of Tredegor.
That's exactly who I mean. Barmium's voice slowly heated with rage, like fire under a cauldron.
He moves from Redania and waits less than 5 years before he starts pestering to buy my land. Aye, and he would have succeeded, too, if I didn't sit on the council. And this dwarf isn't any different. Even lives in the same tower and house.
Well then, Cedra thought, waiting for Barmium to catch his breath. And has Mikhail offered to buy your land?
Not yet, but I'm sure he will. He's already started terrorizing me. Some of my sheep have been disappearing. Oh, don't give me that look. I'm not the only one who's been losing sheep.
Since last week?
Been longer than that. Almost a year now.
Cedra rested her hand on her lute to stop herself from clenching her fist.
So then how could you possibly think Mikhail had anything to do with that when he moved here not a week ago?
Barmium pointed at Cedra and shouted,
I'm sure he's in on it. Maybe he paid someone to start early, so that now he can buy everyone's land more easy.
I highly doubt that, Cedra said, without much conviction in her voice. She knew she had little chance of convincing Barmium, at least for now.
If I were to uncover the identity of this thief, would you consider changing your opinion on Mikhail?
If you can find the thief, Barmium spat, and if the dwarf isn't somehow involved.
Sure, we're not unfriendly folk.
Oh, I believe that, Cedra thought, but simply smiled and bowed.
Then till next we meet. A pleasure meeting you, Barmium.
Go fall on your pitchfork, she thought.
Cedra stormed through the sheep, playing as she did. She found her way back to town in the dark.
She ordered a drink at the Shepherd's Rest and sat across from Jeremiah, where she vented her frustrations. The craftsman nodded and said he sympathized, but Cedra could never tell if he was genuine with his crafty words and impassive face.
Now you're sounding like Barmium, Cedra thought with a sour expression.
She drank beer and saw Zeva and Ethramel walk into the inn. The witcher was covered in blood, and the elf had two bottle-shaped bulges in his pockets. Zeva spoke to the innkeep and went out a back door. Ethramel spotted the two and sat at their table. He put his mug down, sighed, and crossed his arms.
You all right? Cedra asked.
Ethramel huffed.
We had a day.
4. Ethramel inspected the broken fence in the dying sunlight, and looked at the large hole punched through the side of Matthias of Tredegor's manor.
Well, it's Mikhail of Mahakam's manor now, the elf thought with a grimace.
He felt his heady buzz disappearing, slowly replaced by a heady throb, that grim harbinger of hangover. He hoped to find a wine cellar in the house to stave off the headache for as long as possible. His companion, Zevru of Kavir, was hunkered down and looking at the tracks of whatever broke the fence and the wall. In the soft grass around the house, the tracks looked more like round indentations than footprints, at least to Ethramel. But he didn't need to be a witcher to see that whatever cracked the cobblestone ringing the manor, not to mention broke through the wall, was larger and broader than Zevo. Ethramel crossed the fence and approached the two-story home, which was just north of town. He felt a shiver run down his spine, and he focused his senses and lightly touched the cracked wall. He felt slight traces of magical energy, of power, run down his fingertips like an electrical current. "I think," he said to Zevo, "that our creature is of a magical nature." Zevo touched the silver bear's head medallion around his neck.
"Yes, I'll go first."
"By all means." Ethramel was starting to regret his curiosity. He had followed the Vatgern because it seemed the best way to pass the time, and because, Ethramel thought, it would annoy Zevo, who had tried to keep his distance from the elf as of late, ever since he revealed himself to be a sorcerer. Also, Ethramel was really hoping to find a wine cellar. The hole led into a kitchen, which, outside of the detritus spread on the floor, looked thoroughly normal. Ethramel noticed a bloodied cutting board with chicken giblets, rotting and covered in flies, pushed to one side. He stifled a burp and followed Zevo into the adjacent dining room. The centerpiece was the dining room table, but Ethramel's eyes wandered to the length of chain in the corner of the room, next to a large, dried bloodstain. Ethramel picked the chain up and saw a broken link at the end. "It seems our friend Matthias had a few interesting proclivities." Zevo grunted.
"Got some blood on the table, too, along with scratch marks."
"I think it's safe to say this wasn't a random attack, then," Ethramel said. "Someone, likely someone magical, wanted Matthias dead."
Zevo nodded. "I'll check upstairs."
"I'll check the cellar," Ethramel chirped. "Who knows what kind of sick, twisted dungeon he may have down there?" It turned out Matthias of Tredegor had a very normal cellar. Ethramel felt all traces of magical residue disappear as he descended the steps. He found nothing but old furniture down there. That and a wine rack, fully stocked. Ethramel grinned and walked over, inspecting the bottles. Some went as far back as 1261, a fine year. He slid the two most promising bottles in his pockets and grabbed the third most promising, which he promptly uncorked with a dagger. Ethramel was a few swigs in when he heard Zevo descend the stairs.
"Find anything interesting?"
"Depends on what you consider interesting," Ethramel said, holding up the bottle. Zevo's expression showed that he did not consider it interesting. That was fine with Ethramel. It only bolstered his image as a lush not meant to be taken seriously. Such an image had helped him survive in the past. "Besides," he thought, "more for me."
"I found this in his bedroom," Zevo said, holding up a piece of parchment.
Ethramel inspected the document. "Looks like a standard contract. To buy land. Pity none of the important information's filled in."
"Pity," Zevo agreed. He took the parchment back.
Ethramel could feel Zevo wanting to say something, sure as he could feel the magical residue earlier. And Ethramel knew what it was about. "All right, out with it."
"Out with what?"
"Don't act dumb, Vatgern. You've been suspicious of me since Ashford, and I'm sick of the disquiet. Ask what you want to ask, and decide whether you trust me or not, but at least be done with it."
Zevo squinted and asked, "What's an elven sorcerer from the Vryhead Brigade doing this far north?"
It was as Ethramel expected. "First off, I was just in the Vryhead Auxiliary."
"What's an elven sorcerer from the Vryhead Brigade doing this far north?"
Ethramel sighed. "Would you believe me if I said I'm fleeing?"
"You picked a hell of a place to flee," Zevo said. "You know what northerners are doing to sorcerers these days."
"All too well." Ethramel shivered at the thought of being spitted on a sharpened stake, just because of who he was. It was happening all over the north, ever since the secretive lodge of sorceresses were exposed at the city of Loch Muin. The lodge had tried to assassinate all of the northern kings, had, in fact, succeeded in killing King Foltest of Temeria and Edirne's own King Demavend. All for the sake of stability, they had argued. Since then, nearly anyone who had a touch of power was executed, typically without trial. And yet, traveling north still proved less risky to Ethramel than staying south. An image of raining fire and melting men flashed through his head. He heard their screams and took a drink to silence his memory.
"The north is safer to me than the Duchy of Toussaint."
Zevo nodded. "So do you trust me now?"
"Let's get out of here."
The Witcher paused at the hole in the side of the house. He drew his silver sword. Ethramel was going to ask why, but he heard hissing, smelled rot, and then he saw. Creeping towards them, on all fours, were four hunchbacked creatures with humanoid faces, jagged teeth, and large black talons. The sun had set behind the hills, but Ethramel didn't need daylight to know what stalked them.
Ghouls. "Watch out for their leap, and don't let them surround you," Zevo said, which confirmed Ethramel's opinion.
The Vatgern moved first, faster than the elf could have imagined given his large frame and heavy armor. He rushed towards the closer pair of ghouls and swung at the first in a downward arc. The ghoul hopped nimbly to the side, but Zevo pivoted and swung his sword left, chopping the ghoul's head clean off. The second ghoul hissed, but was not fast enough to escape Zevo's blade as it rent open his belly. The creature shrieked and collapsed in his own blood, blood that splattered on the Witcher. Ethramel took a step outside and looked around. There were no farms nearby, and few lights in the distance. He would likely be safe. It was another calculated risk. He gently put the wine bottle down on the cracked cobblestone and gathered his power. He felt the energy of the earth and air gather inside of him as he chanted an elder speech and made a few gestures with his hands. He opened his eyes and aimed at one of the ghouls. Raw power, gathered from the elements, shot from his fingers and flew into the cobblestones, exploding the ground into a dozen jagged rocks that flew with the speed and power of a crossbow bolt. The rocks hit their mark, and the unfortunate ghoul was splattered on the fence behind him. Ethramel felt the power leave him like a heavy sigh, and he drew his sword and readied himself. The remaining ghoul instead charged Zevo, and rent its claws against his side. They were not able to break through his armor, however, and the Vatgern ended the ghoul with a slash across the neck. Zevo caught his breath and wiped his sword clean.
You would think after 100 years, peasants would learn to clean up bloodstains.
You would think. Ethermel sheathed his sword and picked up his bottle of wine. He walked to a part of the fence not covered in ghoul jelly and sat. He watched as Zevo carved up the ghouls. Witches, and sorcerers for that matter, often needed monster bits for potions and rituals. He heard ghoul marrow could catch a fair price. When Zevo was finished, they found their way back to town in the dark. Ethramel ordered a drink at the Shepherd's Rest, while Zevo went to take a bath. He sat with Cedra and Jeremiah and told them what happened. The craftsman and troubadour nodded along, but Ethramel got the feeling they didn't want to know too many gory details. He spared them the part where he eviscerated a ghoul with magic. The two excused themselves for bed as Zevo came back, clean as he could be. Mikhail, who had come down halfway through Ethramel's story, was drinking alone at his corner table. He hailed the two over. Zevo explained what happened, and he showed the dwarf the document they recovered. Mikhail confirmed that it was, indeed, a standard land contract, but could not provide more information than that. Ethramel had his doubts, but said nothing. Zevo collected his 50 crowns and went to his room upstairs. Ethramel pulled out one of the bottles in his pocket and placed it on the table. He had felt the throbbing headache return after he cast the spell, and he only knew one way to stave it off.
"Care for a drink?" he asked.
5. Cedra slept in and ate breakfast alone. She mopped up soggy eggs with stale bread and thought. She pretended not to notice as a local got up from his table and approached hers. "Can I help you?" she asked, stifling a burp.
"Seen you talking to a dwarf yesterday," the local said. "Talked for a while."
"Is that not allowed?" The local crossed his arms in a vain attempt to appear intimidating. Cedra thought he needed to weigh 2 stone more to look even close to threatening.
"Just wondering what you were talking about for so long is all."
"We talked to pass the time." Cedra absently toyed with a wooden fox head pendant. "I'd recommend it. He's going to be your neighbor after all."
"Ain't no neighbor of mine."
"Well, he plans on staying, so you may want to get used to the idea."
"No one will break bread with that murderer. You can believe me on that."
"Oh? What inspires such confidence?"
"Common sense."
The local scratched his forehead. "The dwarf just happens to come here the second Matthias dies. We've fallen on dark days when a good man like that can be replaced with a mountain dweller." "You sure about how good Matthias was?" Cedra thought, turning the pendant over between her fingertips. The fox's face looked faded and weather-worn from years of travel.
"Maybe Jeremiah can touch it up," she thought.
"I'll be sure to ask him next time we talk," she said to the local. The local shook his head. "He should go back to the mountains where he belongs, like the witch living in the hills. At least she has the good sense not to show her face round here." Cedra thought to ask about this witch of the hills, but didn't feel like continuing the conversation longer than needed, so she nodded and went back to her breakfast. She finished quickly, resolving to make productive use of her pent-up energy. She shot the local a glare as she left and made her way to the dry goods store. A gray-haired woman stood behind the counter and welcomed the troubadour. Cedra nodded and browsed the shop, feigning interest in the sacks of feed and stacks of firewood. She settled on buying a small ball of wax, the cheapest item she could find. "Are you Olna?" Cedra asked as she handed over 3 marks.
The woman nodded.
How can I help you, dear?
It's not how you can help me, it's how I can help you, Cedra said with a smile. She grabbed her lute and played a precursory tune. Cedra launched into her ballad before Olna could protest, tweaking words and phrases based on her experience with Barmium the night before. When she finished with a flourish, she looked up to see Olna's smiling face. Cedra mistook the smile for joy.
A fine ballad, Olna finally said. Well written and sung.
Cedra began to bow.
Thank you, I... But I fall short, I'm afraid. Tell me, did you think that singing pretty words about Mikhail would open up my heart to him?
I was hoping, Cedra thought, suddenly feeling unsure. But she didn't let it show on her face.
Why, madam, I'm not certain what you mean. It is my trade to provide entertainment, and the subjects of my ballads are not based on any one person.
Rather, I don't hold it against you, dear, Olna said. You need to make a living after all. I'm more surprised Mikhail thought he could hire an outsider to convince the locals to approve of him. It's a very wealthy mindset, don't you think? To think that anything can be acquired with coin.
Cedra said nothing. She felt her spirit rapidly waning.
I'll tell you what I told Matthias of Tredegor when he once offered to buy a stake in my shop, Olna said. You can't just flaunt your wealth as you please. We're humble folk in the valley, but proud, and we can't be bought. Pass that along to Mikhail. I imagine he'll take it as well as Matthias did.
Cedra bowed stiffly and left. She sat beneath the wooden shepherd. She didn't feel like playing her lute. For one of the few times in her life, her talent had failed. For one of the few times in her life, she felt unsure of what to do next.
It's like lavender all over again, Cedra thought, but knew she was being dramatic. This feeling would pass, as it always did. What she needed was a distraction. Something like...
A shadow fell over her.
She looked up to see Zevo, and she smiled.
And where have you been this fine morning? She asked.
Went to go clean up blood at the manor, Zevo said, as if it was the most common task in the world. Hopefully it won't attract any more ghouls. Do you know anyone who sits on the town council here?
I do, in fact, Cedra thought. I wouldn't recommend speaking with them, though. They're all stubborn old fucks who will bore you with lectures on outsiders and wealth.
I've met two of them, in fact.
Do you know if any of them are interested in ghoul marrow or venom extract?
Perhaps Olna, but I wouldn't bet on it. Your best chance probably lies with Bidlin the Butcher, who I have yet to meet. But look, our friend Jeremiah is coming out of the very shop right now. Oi, Jeremiah, over here.
Hello, friends. Fine morning, is it not?
The craftsman asked as he walked over.
What business had you with the butcher? Cedra asked. Not buying more rations for us, I hope.
Jeremiah shook his head.
Animal bones, actually. Been working on a new design. Spent all morning scouring the base of the hills for wax and timber. All I'm missing now is an ingot of dark steel. I don't suppose either of you would have any.
Cedra and Zevo shook their heads.
Shame, Jeremiah said. Fortunately, I know just where to hunt. With luck, I can find a small deposit of dark ore in the hills. There's just one problem.
After a long moment, Zevo asked, What's that?
I'm glad you asked. You see, according to our local butcher, there's a witch that lives in the hills.
Oh no, Cedra thought. Zevo's eye widened slightly.
A witch, eh?
So I was told. And given that I'm but a humble craftsman, I was hoping...
I'll join, Zevo said without hesitation. I have some questions I'd like to ask the witch about this monster I'm hunting. Go find Ethramel. I'm sure he wouldn't want to miss the chance to meet a...
He spat the last word.
Witch.
Cedra thought to ask about Zevo's uncharacteristic show of emotion, but Jeremiah quickly said,
Will you join us, Cedra? It might make the subject of a fine ballad. The Witch of the Bleeding Valley.
I'd rather not, Cedra thought. She thought back to their encounter with Willibog the Rock Troll and shuddered.
But you were just thinking how you needed a distraction.
Careful what you wish for. So Cedra nodded.
That'll do it for this episode of Tales from the Witcher. This podcast is written and produced by Jacob Gerstel. The Witcher novels are by Andrzej Sapkowski, The Witcher games are by CD Projekt Red, and The Witcher tabletop RPG is by R. Talsorian Games. The music is by Eric Matias at soundimage.org. Be sure to leave a rating and a review, and to spread the word of this podcast far and wide. You can follow the podcast at TalesWitcherPod on X, or at talesfromthewitcher.buzzsprout.com. Thanks again for listening, and I'll see you again next week.